So I wrote this sermon as part of a class this past spring. I've got a couple classmates in the house. Thank you for being here. So it was written months and months ago, fine-tuned here and there, but it's so timely as the months have progressed. But I don't actually mention Charlottesville by name, so I want to just mention it by name and mention all the things that go with that, and know that I'm holding that, and the woman who died, and Barcelona, and just, I mean, it's just so much. So I encourage you during Joys and Sorrows, if you want to share more or process more, I invite you to do that at that time. I just wanted to mention it before I started. That's here too. Is this your daughter? The waitress asked me if my partner was my daughter. Melissa is just 5 years younger than me. But this friendly, hip-looking young woman asked if she was my daughter. We were sitting in front of a window in a cafe in Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. And despite the fact that my daughter was in Texas at that moment, I literally turned and looked out the window, expecting to see her there. I looked back at the waitress, who was smiling back and forth between us, waiting for my answer. I managed to stutter, "Oh, do you mean her? She's my partner. We're only 5 years apart." She said, "Oh, I'm sorry. You called her honey." "I'm really sorry. I stuck my foot in my mouth one other time when I called a woman sir." She didn't realize it, but what the server committed was called a microaggression. Get a little factual here. The term microaggression describes the subtle, stunning, and often automatic and nonverbal exchanges that are put-downs. Because they're often unconscious, they can be more difficult to identify and address than overt forms of discrimination. Perpetrators of microaggressions may not realize the impact of their actions. On the upside, the waitress owned her mistake, and she sincerely apologized. On the downside, my relationship with Melissa was rendered invisible. What other option could there possibly be if one woman called another woman honey? Melissa tried to rationalize what happened by saying, well, in her universe, there was only one option. Her brain ignored the input about our ages. Besides, she wasn't being mean. It's true, she wasn't trying to hurt my feelings. She didn't actually think I looked 20 years older than Melissa rather than 5. But there's intent, and then there's impact. It didn't help that Melissa thought this was all rather amusing and continued to laugh about it long after we had left the restaurant. Jamie Utt, a contributing writer at Everyday Feminism and a diversity and inclusion consultant and sexual violence prevention educator based in Minneapolis, says, "In the end, what does the intent really matter if our actions have the impact of furthering the marginalization or oppression of those around us? For people of identity privilege, this is where listening becomes vitally important. For our privilege can often shield us from understanding the impact of our actions. After all, as a person of privilege, I can never fully understand the ways in which oppressive acts or language impact those around us. What I surely can do is listen with every intent to understand, and I can work to change my behavior. Because what we need to understand is that making the conversation about intent is inherently a privileged action. The reason? It ensures that you and your identity and intent stay at the center of any conversation and action, while the impact of your action or words on those around you is marginalized. So if someone ever tells you to check your privilege, what they may very well mean is stop centering your experience and identity in the conversation by making this about the intent of your actions instead of their impact. That is, not everything is about you. What Jamie wrote helps to put into words why it did not matter to me that our waitress was trying to make our relationship fit into her worldview or narrow universe of possibilities. She should have kept her question to herself or even processed it with someone else if she really needed to figure us out. The very next day, another friendly stranger needed to figure us out. Our friend Andrea had visited us at our cottage, and we were seeing her off before she drove home. As we were standing in the driveway, a 60-ish man pulled up in his pickup truck. I learned later that he knows the contractor who was doing our remodeling, and he had come by to look at the items we had put out on the curb. This man was non-threatening enough in his demeanor, and we didn't really pay him much attention. As Melissa and I were hugging our friend goodbye, the guy interrupted and said, smiling, "Are you all sisters?" Beat. No, I said. Our friend said, "Hey, I'm just a friend." Melissa just smiled and said, "No." And I said, "She's my partner." The air got awkward, and we said goodbye to our friend. I did an about-face and walked back into the cottage fuming. I don't recall what the guy's reaction was. Perhaps he said something like, "Well, I don't know, y'all look so much alike." But I could be remembering what Melissa had said to me in his defense later. Again, he was not being mean. He was just trying to make sense of what he was seeing. Melissa didn't feel the least bit offended or irritated by the exchange. In fact, she was embarrassed by my reaction and irritated that I once again had made things awkward for everyone. Yeah, I made things awkward. My question for these well-intentioned people is this: why say anything at all? What for them was curiosity or confusion created in me a feeling of invisibility. Now, some of you may be wondering, why does it matter if my same-sex relationship is visible or not? Well, here's why. What I want and need from our society is not just recognition that my relationship exists, but that my relationship is valid, that it is part of the pastiche of life. Thinking we are mother-daughter or sisters instead of partners, lovers, isn't just insulting to me, but it tells me that my relationship is not a valid option. I want to be thought of as having inherent worth and dignity along with the rest of the human race. My friend Jackie wrote on Facebook, "Please don't assume that I am like you. Please see me as a lesbian and ask me how that has shaped me as a human being, my perspectives, my fears, my goals, and what I have felt the need to give up in my life in order to feel safe." She's asking to be seen as having inherent worth and dignity, and more. She's pleading with her straight friends and allies to see her uniqueness as well, to see her beauty, her scars, her complexity, her Jackiness. I guess it's always been important to me too. I'm here, I'm queer, celebrate me. I believe that in order to make change in the world, we must do what we can in each moment to model our values and make the way smoother for those that follow. But that isn't everyone's way. In fact, many before me would have chosen not to correct that curious waitress. Many, even now in 2017, when gay marriage is the law of the land, they would prefer to avoid the discomfort of making visible their same-sex relationship. I know Melissa sometimes wishes I would make nice instead of insisting on authenticity every damn time. And more important than my need to be seen and appreciated is my belief in leading by example and being an advocate for those who cannot speak for themselves. My UU values ask that I live authentically and that I work for justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. My hope is that because of my exchange with that waitress, perhaps she was able to see and understand our relationship for what it really is. And therefore, perhaps next time she encounters a same-sex couple, she'll have a different reaction, or at least won't feel the need to ask them to define their relationship for her. In other words, taking the risk to be visible can help pave the way for other LGBTQ people in communities where they have been hiding, which can lead to acceptance and a reduction in microaggressions and an increase in feelings of safety. Did any of you have the chance to watch When We Rise, the TV documentary chronicling the 50-year history of the gay rights movement? We really have made significant progress. But backsliding and human rights can happen so easily. We're seeing the effect Donald Trump's vitriol is having on the behavior of white nationalists and neo-Nazis. They have been given tacit approval by the president to terrorize in the name of patriotism. While I will not rest in my relative comfort here in Madison, Wisconsin, while my queer and trans siblings are still suffering and dying from suicide and murder, as of just last week, I've had to keep changing the number on my sermon. Last week, the 17th trans person was murdered. Almost all of these people who were killed in 2017 so far this year just in the United States are people of color. These are some of our most marginalized and stigmatized people who live at the center of intersections of gender and racial discrimination. In Chechnya this spring, police rounded up, beat, and humiliated dozens of gay or bisexual men in an apparent effort to purge them from Chechen society. My understanding is this is also still going on. The firsthand accounts of survivors of the torture, humiliation, and starvation were collected in secrecy by Human Rights Watch to protect the victims who fear retaliation from both Chechen officials and their own families. Chechnya is a highly conservative, majority Muslim society, and homosexuality is generally viewed as severely tainting to family honor. High-level Chechen officials have publicly condoned honor killings of gay and bisexual men. So yeah, they cannot live safe. They cannot safely live authentic lives. Let's all take a moment to pause here and reflect silently on what I've shared. Now, I'd like you to consider what small part of yourself might you set aside in order to get along in mainstream culture? What piece of your humanity do you cover up or give away because it feels too vulnerable or risky to show it or express it? Perhaps this feels too tender to examine right now, and that's okay. Instead, you might reflect on a time when your words or actions did not have the impact you intended and how you might do it differently next time. E.E. Cummings said, "To be nobody but myself in a world which is doing its best night and day to make me somebody else means to fight the hardest battle any human can fight and never stop fighting." As you leave our sacred space today, I invite you, if you are able, to identify something vital about yourself that you are neglecting or afraid to show. If you are able to give it words, write it down. Whisper it to yourself. Tell someone close to you, or breathe it out into the world. These first steps can be just the beginning of living a more authentic life. A life that models for the next generation what empowerment looks like. A life that heals both you and our world. Blessed be. Never stop fighting.